You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Six minutes after nine here on the West Coast. I'm very excited that the Gunner rejoins us today. Mike, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. The how was Easter?
I can't even remember. It was good. I mean, we went to church and then went to breakfast, or brunch, I should say, and then just kind of hung out, relaxed, and enjoyed the rain.
Are you guys having storms, or just a little bit of Texas weather blowing through?
Just a little bit of rain. Had some really nice fog this morning, which I, if you're driving, that's not fun. But
oh, you're by the, because you're by the lake, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Right. I got a gun question.
Yeah.
Hey Mac, next time you're in the Gunner Talk Guns, could you ask him this question? Has he ever done any muzzle loading hunting? And if so, does he have any recommendations for somebody who's going to get started? So Mike, muzzle loader?
Okay. I've shot him. Actually, I was just discussing this a couple days ago I'd really like to get into it. I've shot a few. I never really got into it that great. I mean, because it was, for me at the time, it was kind of like, you know, I don't have time for this. But no, I really like them. There's a lot of new modern muzzle loaders that are awesome. They do a great job. So the guy who called in, if you're going to get into it, a great program, believe it or not, to get into is the NRA offers a muzzle loading and a reloading program that if you're a beginner, it's fantastic. It doesn't take long. It's about maybe 6 hours. But I read it and it's one of the classes that I might take just to get familiar with it, you know? So it's one area in guns that I'm not really familiar with. I mean, I know basically how it works, you know, the propellant in a pellet, projectile, and then the primer, and then you just pull it back and let it go. But it's pretty neat. Like I said, it's neat shit. But I want to get into it, too. I want to learn more about it anyway.
Okay. All right. So start with the NRA program and then go.
Yeah. I found that that's probably the most information. It has the most information out of all the other programs that I've seen. And, you know, and it covers a lot. I mean, it just doesn't cover, it covers the whole gamut of muzzleloading.
Okay. Would they need to take their own weapon with them to that class, or do you?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. You'd have to contact somebody in your area, but I would assume at that point, because the first part of it's all classroom.
Okay.
And I think you do it, which is nice now, I think you do it online.
Oh.
So it's self-paced, yeah. And then you do it online, and then when you get ready to actually go through the course, then you contact the instructor and you set it up and you go. But I think, yeah, then that's when you bring your gun.
All right. Hold on one second. I just, the NRA, NMLRA basic muzzle loading rifle shooting course.
Yeah.
Teaches the basic knowledge, skills, and attitude essential to the safe and efficient use of muzzle-loading rifles. The course is 12 hours in length, includes classroom instruction, time on a range, shooting a muzzle-loading rifle. Students learn the NRA's three rules for safe gun handling parts, loading, shooting, cleaning, shooting from a standing position, shooting from a crossed stick position, and continued opportunities for skill development. Students will receive muzzle-loading rifle handbook, the NRA gun safety rules brochure, muzzle-loading student examination, Winchester/NRA marksmanship qualification booklet, course completion certificate. And so it doesn't have to say that you bring your own weapon.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do. I mean, they wouldn't supply all those.
Come on, right?
Yeah, and actually, I'm almost positive you bring her up, but okay. You'd have to contact the guy in the area.
What's do you have? Do you have? You know, I know guys who do muzzle loading. They and they talk about up in Minnesota, North Dakota. I want to say it was muzzle loading turkey season. That they say is absolutely the most fun. Calling turkeys and all of it. They said it was absolutely a great time. And you know, hunting is. When you practice it, and again, my experience is in the Dakotas and Minnesota, you know, all the different hunting they have up there. You meet guys who like to hunt, and they get into whether it be bow hunting or whether it be muzzleloader, and all the different variations of it, all pretty cool if you love that.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a lot of fun to get outdoors and do that stuff.
Well, that brings us. Do you ever bow hunt?
I did. Again, I never really got into it. I mean, I used to have a bow, but again, I never got into it. So
okay, all right. You used to have a bow, but no longer.
No, I mean, it sat in the garage like everything else, and I never used it. So I'd always go shooting or, you know, pistol shooting or rifle shooting, and I never really. Had the opportunity to really get into it. So, but I had some friends that were really good at it. So.
Right. Another email question. Hey, Mac, curious about Gunner, and I've heard him talk about how much he used to dive. I think I have some similar issues to him. I started having some headaches, and I've had problems diving because of that. It doesn't seem like I can go to depth, and I'm not really sure what's going on with my head. My question is this. Is there anything that he knows that I could do of that short of staying out of the water? Is there any apparatus that he knows of? Is there any program that he knows of that kind of addresses maybe TBI issues, although mine certainly could have been serious other than multiple IEDs going off in my vicinity and a lot of detonation of IEDs in my vicinity as well after we found them. Mike, you know of any kind of a program relative to that?
No, and you know what? And those are those, I'm never going to give advice.
Right.
Something that could take your life. You know, mine came to me as a realization because I was stubborn and I was like, okay, you know, I can still do this. I'll suffer a little bit of vertigo, but nothing's new. I've dove before and suffered vertigo. My neurologist talked to me and we had a long talk and she said, okay, here's the deal. You can continue diving. If that's your passion and that's what you want to do and that's fine, but I just want you to let you know that it's going to kill you. And oh, yeah. Kind of like that, oh, okay. And she said, there's your choice. You can continue doing something you love and something, or you can give it up and live a healthier life. And key important there was life. So, yeah, it was no brainer, man. I mean, go see your neurologist. If you don't have one, go get one. Let them know what you're suffering from and how it affects you. And they'll give you the medical advice to continue it or to scrap it or may tell you just you can't go any lower than, you know, an atmosphere, you know, 33 feet. But then you're going to say to yourself, well, shit, then I just might as well snorkel. There you go. There's your answer. But, yeah, it's nothing to monkey with, man. I mean, when it starts playing like that kind of stuff, because it was scary. I mean, I'd get vertigo. And I always laughed at people when they tell me, you know, you don't know which way's up. And I'd be like, you know, I had thousands of dives logged and I'd suffered what I thought vertigo, but I'd always been in control of my senses. It was like, okay, that way's up. My bubbles are going up. I got it. Man, that hit me that time. I'll tell you what, I didn't know what was going on.
Wow.
Didn't know where I was, which way to go. You know, and it wasn't as easy as just going, oh, look at my bubbles going up. I couldn't even see bubbles. I couldn't even know. I mean, I just can't think. It was crazy.
And I'll tell you what, and if there's ever a place that you don't need that going on, it's underwater.
Yeah, that's a whole, it's a different world that we're alien to. It's not our cup of tea. We need a device to help us sustain life down there.
Well, and I will tell you this. I mean, I draw a parallel between trying to be a lucid combat decision maker, right?
Yeah.
And somehow or other be experiencing vertigo or something else. You can't do it. And you don't need to make a mistake when you're below the water and your life is at risk.
Yeah, you make a mistake below the water, there is no second chance. You don't get a redo, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, never gamble with that kind of stuff. Go see a doctor. Go see a neurologist. They'll give you the...
Hey, Mike, at what point did you conclude that you needed to go see a neurologist? Because, you know what, a lot of guys... with your experience, they're like, yeah, you know, but there was other guys who had it worse than me, right? You hear that all the time. Like, yeah, you know, there was other guys, you know, like, if you think, you know, my deployment was tough. I mean, second squad seemed to get hit by everything, right? And I didn't have it as bad as those guys. What made you, go see a neurologist?
The fact that it almost cost me my marriage. Because we would have discussions about stuff, and literally within sometimes seconds, my wife would say something, and I would look at her like, "What are you talking about? You know, why did you give me, you know, 5 minutes of warning?" She'd be like, "What? You knew this. We talked about this an hour ago. You said that you were going to be ready." And I'm like, "What? I never said something like that. You know, I'm not stupid. I remember everything. Look who I am. I mean, shit. I mean, I'm a Marine gunner. I'm an infantry officer. I can do all this shit. You're telling me I can't remember a simple, you know, dinner date? Or, you know, I mean, just all that stuff was going on all the time. You know, I'd go, but then it started hitting me, and it was like, I'd get my car, and I'd drive to go to work, and end up in San Diego. And I'm like, holy shit. You know, that fear, that immediate fear of like, shocks you. How the hell did I get here? Am I okay? Is that hurt anybody on the way here? That stuff started going on a lot. And then it finally dawned. I mean, then after all that time of my wife looking at me saying, you got a problem. And I'd look at her and go, no. She was right. You know, and I was like, holy shit. Then that's when I went down to the distributor clinic down in San Diego. And got checked out. And the doctors went, all right, you got a problem. But the good thing is we can help you. And it was a lot of physical therapy.
How long from flash to bang, when you started having those issues, how long did you go sideways with it before you actually went to see a neurologist? Was it years?
Yeah, and 2 more combat deployments.
Wow.
Was getting blown up, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it took a while of me kind of, you know, trying to say, okay, yeah, I got a problem. I need some help with this. And, I mean, it was still, again, and that was at an early age stage. Most of the time, the doctors had no idea what was going on and how to treat it anyway. So, no matter what, I mean, it's kind of that mentality of, I go to the doctor, all they're going to tell me is, you know, yeah, you got a problem. We don't really know how to treat it, but let's take all these courses, this course of action and this and this and this, and then we'll figure out something down the road. But I think it came down to a realization. I talked to a lady. I think it was like, it really shocked me when I was talking to this lady in Camp Pendleton at one of the clinics. And it was like a head trauma clinic or something like that. And we were talking, and she was doing this evaluation. And when we got done, I said, okay, so doctor, that's how? And she looked at me, she was writing down, she goes, what do you mean pass? And I said, well, I'm okay, right? she used to be like, no. So what did I kind of screw up on? I had taken, she'd given me like a test. And one of those tests, you got like, there, something you got to pick out that's wrong or do this or this problem or this.
Right.
But it was kind of, it wasn't a standard like A, B, C, D, you know, kind of test. It was just kind of weird. One of those psychological. And she gave it to me in the beginning and I did it. And, you know, you walk away and you're like, I aced that thing. Yeah. That was too easy. And then, at the end, she's going through all this stuff and she hands me this thing and we go through it line by line. And I swear to God, man, I was getting so angry with her because I thought she was lying to me. I mean, I was looking at my answers and I'm like, she's like, okay, so read this to me. And I'd read it. And then she'd go, okay, what's the correct answer? And I'd look and go, yeah, I didn't circle this. Is this my paper, doc? I wouldn't answer like that. I'm not stupid. You know, I know what that is. And as she was working with me through it, I could clearly see the problem. And it was a lot of, you know, again, you're not seeing the issue because it's kind of, I don't know, better words. You don't want to see that you're hurt. You know, you want to see that you can't do these things to function. So.
Well, your whole life, you've been a rational person and, you know, you can explain stuff.
Yeah, it was tough.
And all of a sudden you get to a point where, and you're a successful guy. Right? And you've always dealt
well,
with.
I hope I was.
No, you are. And so, you know, to think that somehow or other that you're not seeing what you see. Come on.
Yeah, that was the hard part.
I'm not seeing what I see. I just had Paul Kennedy on, and it was almost like the realization in Iraq that nothing I see, everything I see is because they want me to see that. It's not the truth. So my eyes in Iraq constantly lie to me based on what they want me to see. And it takes you a while to learn that, right? And then now somebody's telling you something similar in a different vein. Interesting. I've got an email here that asked a question based on Kennedy's interview. Hey, Mac, I thought one of the interesting parts of your interview with General Kennedy was the discussion about trying to restrain killing. I think that him simply saying that killing is easy shocks most people. I'd be curious Mike's thoughts on it. I thought it was an interesting discussion between you and him about what it's like to say stop, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
How unpopular that moment is, how when people's blood gets up, you don't care. You just want somebody to pay because you just paid. I'd be curious to hear what Mike has to say about that. So, Mike, your thoughts on restraining and killing.
That's tough. I mean, because I was a victim of that, you know. You get into this. It's easy. It's so easy for a human to become barbaric. Those traits, those basic traits of violence, you know, are at the surface of every one of us. They just need some kind of venue to come out. And for us, it was combat. And these guys would shoot at you. They'd wound people. They'd kill your friends. And all you wanted to do was just go and take and just kill them all. I mean, just not stop, just keep killing. And it was so easy. And it made you feel that instantaneous gratitude. And I always said that, you know, you want to see, you know, human form in its simplest, basic form. It's in a firefight, you know, and you get desensitized real quick on what it's like to be human. And it's an awful feeling. I mean, it's a horrible feeling. One of the stories that I tell that it's kind of a good relation of the difference in it was Megan McClung, was the PAO at 1st Marine Division. And I'd met her when she was a young second lieutenant, just graduated from the Naval Academy. and brilliant Marine, and full of life. You know, here's a feisty Irish redhead with freckles, you know, basically being told she can't do these types of things and she'd go and do it. Well, Megan got out and was working for KBR out in Baghdad at the Bayah at International Airport. So I'd run into her, and, you know, it was kind of like this. Well, at first it was kind of funny. The Marines were all looking at me and they're like, "Hey, sir, check that lady, that chick out." And she was in civilian attire. You know, and Megan's a good looking, she's a good looking woman. Right. And, so I turned and looked at her and she looked at me at the same time and she had this big beaming smile and she comes running across the parking lot and jumps up because she's little, jumps up, gives me a big hug and she's like, "Gunner, how are you?" And I'm like, "God, look at you." You know, we talked a little bit and all the Marines are looking like, "We can't take this guy anywhere. He knows everybody." And it just added to my legend of, you know, who I was. But
exactly.
She goes, "Hey, you're going back to Fallujah and, you know, Ramadi." And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Do me a favor. You got to take these Beanie Babies with you." I said, "Beanie Babies? What are you talking about, Megan?" So we go in this warehouse and there's these two huge pallets with these boxes on there. And some young girl in Kentucky or Tennessee had collected these on her Facebook page and sent them to the kids of Iraq. You know, and Megan ended up with them. And they've been sitting there for months and no one was going to take them. You know, no righteous infantryman would be caught dead with Beanie Baby.
Yeah,
right?
Somebody else, not
sorry.
Me.
So Megan's doing all her like, "Please, please, 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 please." And it worked, you know, because I felt bad for her. I'm like, "Okay, I'll take them." So I go to my staff sergeant. I'm like, "Hey, pull the trucks around. We're going to load these Beanie Babies." And of course I get the Beanie Babies. "What are you talking about, sir? Let's just shut up and put them in the truck," right? So we do that. And everybody's now, I hear them on the radio making fun of Gunner. You know, "Gunner's cool. Look at Gunner. You know, just had a girl and boy, you melt like a candle." You know, and they're like, "Hey, knock it off, guys." You know, we're playing this on the way back. And I'm having fun with it.
Right, right.
But we get back to Ramadi, Blue Diamond, and these Beanie Babies are now sitting around the camp, and they're just taking up space. So one day we're like, "Hey, make sure everybody grabs like a salt pack full of Beanie Babies and hand them out." Well, we do that. We go on these patrols. And prior to this, remember, we're getting shot at every day. I mean, everywhere we go, someone's trying to kill us. And then what I noticed was the Marines, when we go on these patrols or go on these things, then they'd stop and hand out these Beanie Babies to kids, and the smiles were all over the place. They felt like they were back home again.
Right.
And these were their nieces and nephews or the children in the neighborhood, you know, because the children over there are just like any other children. They're innocent.
Right.
But it brought them back to the realization that they're human again. It brought back this, you know, this caring, loving side that we had lost because you become, again, so numb to life. It doesn't mean anything. You can take it at the whim, you know. So to have these interactions with these Beanie Babies, and we were handing these things out, it really kind of brought them back out, and it brought them out of this and showed them what was important again. That just being kind and being a human is really what it's all about. And they all, you know, were very thankful of it. And when I saw Megan again, we talked about it at length one day at lunch. It was my second deployment coming back. And she looked at me and said, "Yeah, I knew. I knew that all the time, Mike. You just had to listen to me. Believe me." Shut up, Mike. And then, unfortunately, Megan lost her life about a week later. In Ramadi, on patrol to an IED. But, you know, there's that Beanie Baby story that really kind of, you're right. You can get caught in a rut where killing is easy, man. You really can. And it's really hard to come out of that. And if you don't have somebody there, good sound leadership that can pull you back out of that, if you leave the country with that mentality, that mindset still, you're going to have a lot harder time transitioning. You know, it's going to be really, really, really rough. I mean, it was rough to begin with, but it's going to be 10 times worse when you're trying to transition with that kind of, that thought towards other humans, you know? And, it's just, yeah, I think you got to find your own way back.
Right.
But, you know, for us, really kind of showed me that lesson was, again, Megan McClung showed me that lesson with the Beanie Babies. And, I'm forever grateful for it because what she did.
And just what it is to continue to try to be, not forget that you're human in the course of all that.
Yeah, you know, because you lose kind of senses. There's nothing greater reward when you make someone smile. You know, you make them feel good about themselves. You make them feel like they're the only person in the world. That's one of the greatest rewards. It's one of the greatest feelings you can have. And you lose that. You know, you lose that really, really fast. And it's hard to get it back. So, yeah, I agree. It's, you gotta be careful and cautious every step you take over there. Because, it is difficult. I mean, it's easy to get into that groove of just go out and kill everything. It's hard to be human. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Hey, another email. Interesting question. Hey Mac, I love these discussions because a lot of it gets to some of the issues that we struggle with. I listened to your interview with General Kennedy and your retelling of the story that Carl Marlanis told about taking the life of an NBA soldier that he really didn't have to kill. I think it's something that haunts people that have done it. My story centers around an ID going off and people running. And we shot. And I look back on it now, and we used to joke that only the guilty run and all those different things. When the truth was, you know, if you didn't run, you were probably crazy. Because, you know, you knew what was going to happen. Somebody was going to get shot. And if you were a military-age male in particular and you were standing around there, that was not going to be a healthy situation for you. My regret is very similar in that we didn't show the maturity or the strength in combat. I was a young corporal, and I didn't know what I was to find out later on. That I should have stopped, and I should have stopped the shooting. I regret that. I wish I would have been smarter and better. Just want to say that I appreciate your program and the thoughtful things that guys say. I don't know that you hear this kind of stuff a whole lot of places. I certainly enjoy the programming. I really enjoy when I hear accomplished, smart guys talk about the way they struggle with it. Because it makes me feel like I'm not alone in what I struggle with. Have a great day. Great to hear Gunner back on again. Enjoy the program. Mike, how important it is that gets communicated, that it's not easy and that everybody makes mistakes and we all struggle with it. How important is
that? You know, it is the most important. I mean, the bounce back is the key. What he said is, one of the things that, I think I told you what happened, but, you know, Sergeant Benson, he was the first LAR with me, and he was the gunner on my wingman vehicle. He took his life after the war while he was attending the University of Minnesota, a MESEPer, or ECP, I should say. And stellar Marine, as good as they get, man. And we, our two LAV-25s, we were parked on the side of the road waiting for the rest of the battalion to catch up. And, as morning came, right off to our left flank was about 30 to 40 regular Iraqi soldiers in uniform, in defensive position, in depth, with machine gun positions and you name it, man. I mean, it was a textbook position. They were waking up, two LAVs sitting on the side of the road. We were unaware of their where they were at, and they were unaware of us. And when we kind of saw each other at the same time, my driver immediately closed his hatch, and yelled out, contact left. And I looked over, and that's where, you know, Duffy was on the show when we were talking about it, because Duffy was in the vehicle with me.
Right.
And we opened fire on these guys with 25 millimeter and coax. And there were guys in between. There were, out of the 30 to 40, I would say, just maybe less than half were surrendering. The others were fighting, shooting RPGs and machine guns at it.
Mm.
And we couldn't, it was kind of that, you know, what do? We have people surrendering, but yet we have people that are right next to them firing at us. So we had to self-defense. We had to defend ourselves. And we opened fire on these guys, which seemed like a lifetime, but really less than a minute until they all were surrendering. But I remember after the aftermath of it and seeing this, and it was tough, Mac, because you're trying to come to grips with these guys. Some of these guys were no longer combatants, but the others were.
Right.
And it cost Benson his life. He couldn't differentiate. He couldn't come to a good place in his life that what he had done was the right thing to do. And we had talked about it ad nauseum while we were together, and everybody did. And I think everybody that was involved struggled with it afterwards. And it was tough. And, like I said, I just remember when the battalion surgeon showed up with all the corpsmen and we were tending to the wounded, trying to save their lives. It was just, it's just the impact hits you. And again, how you go about making it better is you talked about it. You talked about it with people you trust, you know, and you talked about people that could understand, and you just kind of go forward with your life. You know, you can't pause, you can't stop, you can't, that's the key. You just got to continue to go forward.
Right. Right. You know, that seems to be the hardest part in all of the mental health part is when guys get stuck. You know, what do you do when guys get, you know what I mean? That place where
when the wheels come off, what do you do?
It's like, look, you know, it was a confusing situation, right? And
one that we weren't trained for.
Right. And,
you know, there's no training syllabus that talks about that you go through in a simulator or anything else, you know, so when it happens to you, it's kind of this, you know, shit, this is not a good situation, but then nothing that you do over there is in a good, you're put you in a good situation.
Right. Right. And then in the aftermath, when some guys can't get out of that rut, you know, it's interesting because some guys can accept, hey, it was confusing. Look, you know, what were we going to do? How could we sort out who was surrendering from who not, you know, and try not to risk our own lives? What were we going to do? Jump out of our vehicles and put up our hands and say, hey, everybody settle down. It's just, you can't do that. And some guys some guys can accept that, but some guys can't. And that to me is the hard part about it is that, you know, when you struggle to accept it, how does that work? And is there a way to get somebody through that when they, you know, short of taking their own life? And because that, I don't know that there's too many more deflating events that can, you know, that can happen to guys. And really, every group of guys you go with is different, you know. They're all different. And then you come home. And, you know, and you're happy, you know, part luck, you know, part skill that you got home. But you're home. And then when somebody can't deal with it and they take their life after they were fortunate enough to live, just crushing, just crushing to everybody else. And certainly, then everybody else lives with the, you know, geez, I wish I could have done more. I wish I could have helped and, you know, and whatnot. But it's just interesting how some guys can fight through that. And this whole concept of post-traumatic growth, can some guys grow and other guys not? Some guys are disabled and some guys can grow from the experience. And what defines that? What's the difference between a guy that takes it and grows from it and a guy that doesn't? And kind of to that end, I'll ask you a question right here. Hey, Mac, do you think faith has a component in it? Let me tell you a funny story. And General Kennedy mentioned him. General Kennedy mentioned it, and so I'll mention it again. Chris Bronzy is a mutual friend of General Kennedy's, myself, and the gunner. We're all good friends. I got home and I was having a tough time. And it was getting made worse. I was working for the worst officer I'd ever worked for. And I could, when your black blood is constantly flowing through you, and you know, it's just not a good thing. And you feel like, I'm not getting better, man. I'm on edge. I hate people. And thank God I work with the guys I work with because they understand and they laugh at me and things like that. But I'm pissed, man, and I'm getting more pissed. So I call up Chris Bronzy and I call up Luke McConnell. And so I asked Luke, I said, hey, how do you deal with this? And because Luke McConnell had been through a lot of stuff as a Marine. His company was a company at Haditha. And Luke was 18 miles away when it happened, or 13 miles away, and he got there, and he did everything right, and the Marine Corps didn't treat him very well. Treated him poorly, as a matter of fact. And he has nothing but love in his heart for the Marine Corps, and he takes care of his Marines, and just an awesome guy. So I called him, and I said, do you have any advice? Like, how do you do it? And he said, I don't handle it well, to be honest with you. And so I can't give you any advice. I don't handle it well. I said, what? He goes, yeah, Mac. I struggle with it. So I think I'm the wrong guy to give advice. I said, okay. So then I called Chris Bronzy, and I said, Bronzy, how do you deal with it? And he goes, I don't want to tell you because you'll get mad at me. I said, no, Bronzy, I swore to God I'm not going to get mad. He goes, no, I know you. You're going to get mad. And I said, you know what? I said, so we're buddies. I call you for help, and you say no? He said, okay. He said, God. I said, for the love of God, Bronzy, are you kidding me? He said, I told you. And I said, you're going to give me God? I'm asking for help. You're going to give me God. He said, I think it's a part of it. So, Mike, I'll ask you, do you think faith is a component of it? And we don't have as much faith as...
It is now.
It is now for you? Was it not before?
No, it wasn't, and I struggled hard at it, man. And it wasn't until Bronzy's right, and faith has a big bearing on it, you know, that you kind of believe, like, I'd always believed, but it wasn't strong in my life, not like Bronzy. You know, at that time, because you know as well as I do, he was very involved in faith.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult to actually accept that. I mean, because it just seemed weird.
Right.
But after a while, after talking to people, I remember having discussions with Chaplain Father Divine, Chaplain Guy Lee, and all those people of, strong religious faith of what is correct and what is incorrect, and kind of coming to a good place in your life, I should say, at the end. That was kind of the most challenging.
Yeah, interesting. I do believe it helps relative to the coping part of it. I think that people that people who have a strong faith, I think sometimes it's easier to accept because they find purpose in it. And I'll tell you what, I know a lot of people that laugh at stuff like that. Like, that's so, like, look, you're not them, obviously. And so, who are you to laugh at them and what they believe in? I mean,
I used to say, I wish I was so strong. I wish I was as strong as you were.
Right.
Those people that would laugh. But, you find out in the end that they're just have different, they're coping with it a different way, and they're not actually coping with it. They're just going on with it. They're not finding any resolution in what they do with their daily life. So.
All right, we got to take a quick break. And then I got another gun question for you. The gunner joins us after a long weekend here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch your dial. More of this program coming up next. Don't go away.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website. Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Tuesday, the Gunner's with us, talking about some heavy stuff today. So we'll change gears a little bit. For those of you who are just joining us, if you haven't heard the news, a guy who killed somebody on Facebook which I have to tell you that I don't know what Facebook has to do to kind of, and I don't know if it's maybe it's they do too much content to have some kind of screening device on it, but some of the things that go out live on Facebook chiefly, good God, man, whether it be the sexual assault or the beatings or that goes on, it's unbelievable. But anyway, this guy shot and killed somebody on Facebook, and he's been found dead after a after some kind of chase with Pennsylvania police. So anyway, Mike Musselman joins us, and we've been talking about some of the things that General Kennedy and I talked with this morning as we talked about leadership and in combat. Mike, one more question relative to that. I think it's funny. You know, you could talk about an awful lot of stuff with guys who've gone to war. And Paul Kennedy, and it is by fate, you could call it luck or bad luck or whatever, but, you know, he commands 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines in Ramadi, and it's on there every day. He also commands the 2nd Marine Regiment when we were in Afghanistan, just south of them. When there's pretty incredible fighting going on up in Sangin. And so, when you ask him a question like, you know, what is your advice for small unit leaders? Two simple things. Know your business and be disciplined. Be disciplined. And, to me, really interesting, the more you can talk and have all these different discussions about, you know, about going to war and all that, the word discipline comes up over and over with, you know, just almost everybody who is I think smart, you know, and thoughtful about when they go. So your thoughts on that? Obviously, I know you won't be surprised by it, but just
I mean, discipline is the root. If you have to any good foundation, discipline is that strong foundation that makes everything else work. So if you don't have good discipline, then I feel sorry for you.
You know what? That's interesting you say that. And only a wise man makes that statement, because Mike, if you're not disciplined, what's in store for you?
Oh, heartache and trouble, man. I mean,
right.
Yeah, you reap what you sow, and it's nothing good will come from it. So it is difficult.
Yeah. Heartache and sadness is what's headed your way.
And not just in the military, Mac.
No, that's what, Mike, let me tell you, there was some serious wisdom in what you just said. Yeah. Heartache you're in store for it.
Yeah, a load of it.
Right, and your combat experience will only be a part of it. That's where it starts.
Yep. Your whole life is just going to be, you know, going to be muddled in it, and it's just tough. If you don't have it, it's not going to come to you. You got to practice it.
And I'll tell you what. And if you don't have it, as you reflect on it, as your life goes by. How would I say this? And you reflect on what you didn't do.
Yeah.
Your struggle with it will only get worse, because then you'll say, well, why didn't we do it? You know, I mean, other people talk to us about it.
Well, the lack of discipline, Mac, as you know, will lead to nothing but like, trouble.
No, it's a road to a bad place. And we as a culture, we don't like that word, man. Discipline. What do you mean?
Yeah. Regrets. You'll have a lot of regrets in your life with no discipline.
Yeah. What happens to you in combat or wherever you fight is only the beginning. It's only the beginning. A final gun question on a Tuesday. Michael Musselman, our guest from Granbury, Texas. Hey, Mac. Curious. Gunner's thoughts. Relative to targets, there's certainly a whole lot of targets that are on the market these days. I'm partial to metal targets. I like them because they're sturdy. But I'd just be curious Does he own targets? If so, what kind?
Easy question.
Okay, go ahead.
Metal targets provide you excellent feedback. So instantaneous feedback. And that's good. You should shoot metal targets whenever you can.
Okay.
I mean, 'cause it's instantaneous feedback. If you, what we've always talked about is shot placement. You need to shoot at targets that have anatomically correct parts. You know where the body is. Focus in on those. Shoot at the vital organs, of whatever it is. If it's a deer, a human, or, you know. And if you're a competition shooter, then continue to shoot at ringed bulls, scored ringed bullseyes. But if you're shooting for the fact of combative shooting, you know, to defend,
right,
then you need to switch it up. You need to do the shot placement, you know, vital areas, and you need to do feedback if you're actually hitting the target. And a good way to do that is take a paper target with vital areas and use that 3M glue and glue it to the front of a steel target. You know, so you're kind of accomplishing both.
Ah, I like that. Because I was going to ask you, how do you know where you hit on those targets?
Well, after a while, if you get steel targets that are silhouetted, not just the round targets, but silhouetted, you can draw it in with the magic marker. You can superimpose it. You can do it, everything. Just whatever your imagination comes up with.
Right.
You know, one, like I said, one area is just use the 3M type spray glue and spray it and put that target on there. And then when you need a new one, just spray it over the top of that one and cover it up again.
Ah, you don't even have to do all the cleanup and the fuss and muss. You just over and over and over.
Just over and over and over.
Nice. All right, man. What's in store the rest of the day in Granbury?
I got to go pick up a closet pull down and install that. You know, so our closet's huge. So you got to use a pull down to maximize the space.
Yeah, that's a pretty, is it a one-day project? Is it a multiple-day project? What do you think?
Famous last words, right? It should be a one-day project.
Okay.
But we'll see. Okay. I mean, it depends on how much you got to actually do to change the actual closet, so.
Nice. All right. Hey, certainly appreciate a little bit more serious conversation today. So, but certainly appreciate your perspective always. So thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem.
I'll talk to you on Thursday.
Okay, sounds good.
There you have it. Michael Musselman. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only Battle Mug. You can find it at battlemug.com. You can find their whole line of products. We're going to get them on hopefully this week and talk about it and tell you about all their products. We've kind of focused on the Battle Mug. But time for you to meet some of the other products so you'll hear them. And they're, like I said, they're pretty cool. If you haven't been to the website, maybe we'll do that tomorrow. It's a great company, a veteran-owned company, and their products are appropriate for, you know, any kind of commemorative event where you would say, hey, somebody went out of their way for me to do this. And that's what you're looking for. So, if you're looking for that, check out battlemug.com. Awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. So, with that said, we're done. General Kennedy's interview, going to repeat here in a matter of seconds. So, if you joined us late, stand by, and you'll hear his interview right here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the home of All Marine Radio, the All Warrior Radio Network. Have a great day. Out.